Hey y'all, I'm Mandy.
I'm Carrie, and this is Monstrous.
Okay, it's so funny. I died. Okay, so this happened September 11th. A jogger was at a park jogging, obviously, in Sabah, Malaysia, right? When he was attacked by a gang of otters.
Oh, hell no. Fuck that shit. Could you imagine that?
I read that and I was like, a fucking a gang of otters? What?
They made them feel like
oh, it was hilarious. I laughed so hard. It says, that she was suddenly ambushed by them and they mauled her. Like, they fucked her up. Like, that's not funny. Just the fact that it was little otters.
The little cute ones?
Yes, like otters.
I didn't know they were men.
Yeah, they are. They're not nice at all. Like, because in this park specifically, like, they have a fence put up because there is a wild group of otters that live in the area, so they have a fence put up to try to keep them out of, like, the park area. But I guess people keep feeding them.
Oh, shit.
She said that she was just jogging along. It says that it happened about 6:30 in the morning. That she was just jogging along, and then all of a sudden she sees something climb up out of the fucking, like, drain pipe. And they just attacked her.
What the hell?
Yep. The wildlife, like, after they attacked her, they, you know, like, it said that they fled.
You know, whoop her ass and him right now.
She was attacked by a gang of otters, and then the gang of otters fled the scene. That's how it was worded. The wording that they used is what makes it so funny.
Poor girl.
Yeah, I feel so bad for her. The wildlife people had come out to try to, like, find them, but they were gone. They couldn't find them. They said that they believe because of the wildlife or the otter population that's right there in the park, they believe that maybe they felt that she was a threat to their cubs.
Oh.
And so that's why they attacked unprovoked.
Damn.
Because all she was doing was running. They didn't even know they were there. And typically the otters are fed by the locals. So yeah. They think that they might have had cubs and they felt threatened and so they attacked.
No, whooped her ass.
Oh, yeah. Look at the picture.
They fucked her up.
Damn. On her face and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she don't go running there no more.
Probably not. But apparently, like, all over the place, people are attacked by otters. Like, it's not just a random thing that happens.
Could you imagine saying that to somebody tell you, what happened to you? Did a gang of otters so whooped my ass and ran. Could you imagine that, Sam, and explain to people what the fuck happened?
Do you know how to bruise? Yeah, really, oh yeah, because you don't think of that. When you think of otters, you're just like, oh, they're so cute, and I just want to cuddle one. No, apparently they actually attack people. They attack people on a regular basis.
We don't have otters around here, do we?
We live in the Midwest. We ain't got no damn otters.
Hey, I don't know.
Unless they're in a zoo.
They're seeing mountain lions and shit like that and everything else. Do you not see that posted on Facebook?
No.
They do. It's on Facebook.
Well, are you sure it's not a bobcat?
Either way. Or a mountain lion, a bobcat, what the fuck?
Or not a bobcat.
Yeah.
It's not a bobcat. A, like a coyote or something like that. Because coyotes and what's the other one? Not bobcats, but they're similar to that. Dang it, now I'm trying to tell you, I can't think of it. But they look similar to mountain lions.
I don't know. Either way, they're big-ass cats, and they're not nice.
Yeah, there's another cat. Now that I'm trying to tell you, I can't think of it. There's another cat that looks similar to a mountain lion other than a bobcat. I'm a, fucking, everybody's going to be like, this bitch is stupid. Because I can't think of what it is right this second. And they're confused. They get mixed up all the time.
Well, I don't know. Either way, they're seeing a big-ass cat that's dangerous around here. That sightings have been posted on Facebook and shit like
just
that.
Just lay down and play dead.
Oh.
Just lay down and play dead.
No, and then I'll take my limp-ass body from fucking where, and I'll be
like... Your dog Lennon is going to run after you.
Well, if I lay there dead, it's going to eat me anyway.
No, it won't. They're predators. They kill their prey. They don't eat stuff that's already dead. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's like a house cat. House cats don't eat a mouse that's already dead. They go after the live mouse. Mm-hmm. And they're cats. I mean, yeah.
It looks like we've seen an armadillo. Armadillo in the middle of the room.
Armadillo?
How do you say it?
Armadillo. You said armadillo.
Called, however you say it, it looks like it was. There was one in the middle of the road the other night. I don't think it was one, but it looked like there was. That's exactly what it looked like. It was dead, whatever it was, but it, that's what it looked like.
I mean, it might have been somebody's pet. People got some crazy pets around here. Where we used to live, this lady, she used to live there. She don't live there no more, but she had like 4 pet possums. She'd be walking around with them. They'd be on her shoulder and fucking she'd be carrying one like a baby and shit. No, thank you. Those things are mean. Mean as hell. I found a baby one time. I was little, so I was still living in North Carolina. I found one because I kept hearing this hissing noise. I couldn't figure out what the hell it was. And I was probably, it was before my mom, Susie, passed away. So I was probably like 10 or 11. And I went looking around the house trying to figure out what this noise was because we didn't have a cat. Like, what the fuck is hissing? I looked behind our VHS player, and there was a tiny baby possum just hiding back there. It was a little tiny thing. It was like as big as my hand. It was scared as shit, obviously. But it's listening and shit. And I wanted to keep it because I was a kid. And I was like, oh, it's so cute. Melissa wouldn't let me. But those things are mean.
Yeah, they're mean.
Like this late, like, and they weren't baby possums she had. She had, like, one was, like, hanging onto her leg, and it was as long as her fucking calf. Like, no. No, thank you.
They're not nice.
I'm good. I don't want something that can jump on my face and eat me.
Yeah.
Like, just fuck me all up, and there's nothing I can do about it. Because they got claws. Like, they just grip onto you. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
Now that we've talked about otters attacking people and...
You have an amazing story.
Yep. All right. Yep. Lay your feet back.
Feet don't go back.
Yeah, it does. It's just a little tiny. Probably grabbed the wrong one. It's got a big one and a little one. Okay. So it was December 1st, 1991. I wasn't even born yet.
I was. I was born in 82. I was here.
You said you were born when?
In 82.
I thought you said 92. I was like, bitch, that's a year later. Okay, so it's December 1st, 1991. It's a quiet Sunday morning in Orange County, Costa Mesa, California. Jose Esquivel was at home sleeping when around 9 a.m. frantic knocking on the door woke him up. He arose and peeked out his window, not recognizing the red Corvette that had pulled up in his driveway. He went back to bed, ignoring the person that was knocking on his door. Eventually, they gave up and went away, but only to return about 4 hours later, about 1:30. This time, his front door was open.
Sounds good.
A woman walked right in. Jose realized then that he knew her. She was Omima Nelson. The two had briefly dated more than a year earlier, but she often went over to Jose's home to party with him and his roommates. This time, however, she didn't come over to hang out or party. This time, she needed his help. Jose could see injuries on her, and based on the fact that she'd been crying, he knew that she was upset and that something was wrong. She went on to tell him a story so chilling that it sent chills up his spine.
Here it goes.
So, Jose, that her husband, I might need to come down so I can, you know, move it. Omima told Jose that her new husband had attacked her, that he tied her up and sexually assaulted her. She said she needed help, and when Jose asked her what she needed help with, she said, quote, I just killed my husband. Oh, shit.
I'm telling you, that's your fucking catchphrase.
But the worst was yet to come out. This case involved a twist so gruesome that it would shock the entire community. Omana's story begins 23 years before and nearly 8,000 miles away from where we began this case. She was born in South Egypt near the Sudanese border. She grew up in a poor farming village, and her life was hard, truly harder than most. Her father was known as a violent man with a very bad temper. And eventually, her parents had divorced. In simple terms, her family situation was chaotic. Following the split of her parents, Omama's mom had moved them to Cairo, an area also known as the City of the Dead, a slum area where 500,000 people scraped by while they lived surrounded by graves. Which, I'm good. No thanks. I'm cool with that. But I'm not about to live surrounded by some fucking graves.
No.
You know that shit is haunted as hell.
But that could be fun, though.
Not if the shit attaches to you. I'm good.
See, here we go. Here we go with that again.
Yep. See, it's like, no.
That could be fun, though.
Yeah.
Get a Ouija board.
My luck, that shit would attach to me and be like, oh, this bitch is all kinds of fucked up. Let's have her.
They might think that you're fun.
Well, I don't think they're fun. Okay. So while dreaming of a better life, Omama had met an American oil worker in Egypt, and the two had become involved to a point where her family insisted that they get married. And so they did. This was because Omama was Muslim, and now no longer a virgin, her family felt that no Muslim man would accept her as his wife. Omama, however, seen it in a different light. Besides saving her family's honor, it also gave her a way out of Cairo and gave her the hope of a better life in America. This man was her ticket to a better life, her ticket to freedom. So when the man's job ended in Egypt, the newly married couple left for America. However, the dream Omima had was quickly squashed. Shortly after returning to Texas, her marriage ended in divorce, and now the young 18-year-old Omima was a stranger in a strange land completely on her own. She quickly became overwhelmed, but she found that her beauty could help her get by in her new country. She had an exotic look to her. She was dark-skinned, petite, and what most would consider very attractive. She used this to her advantage. Her looks became her means to survive. For the next few years, Omima drifted between bars, meeting men going from one relationship to the next, eventually finding herself in Orange County, California. Omima really didn't have any job skills to help her navigate this new place on her own. Aside from sometimes getting nanny jobs and being a housekeeper, her beauty was all she had. On occasion, she was able to get work as a model. According to the Los Angeles Times, Omima was a beauty with cheekbones that could cut glass and was thirsting for someone that could take care of her. She needed to feel wanted and loved. And in 1991, this star-stopping beauty met Bill Nelson while playing pool. Bill Nelson spent his life as a pilot until he was caught and convicted of smuggling weed in 1984.
Well, he was a prize. Not what she was looking for.
Following a 4-year sentence in federal prison, Bill was released on parole and he began to work for a mortgage company. With what mortgage company?
Drug dealer.
Well, he wasn't a drug dealer. He was a drug smuggler. He didn't sell it or deal it. He just smuggled it in from another country.
He was the send out.
Bill Nelson was a flamboyant, large belt buckle kind of man. So, cowboy hat, big belt buckle.
Silly.
Yep.
Real silly.
He was larger than life with a very big presence. He was said to be the kind of guy that people stopped and looked at when he walked into a room. Those close to him said he talked loud, was sociable, and was a character. Bill was 56, old enough to be Omima's dad.
She got her sugar daddy.
Bill had 5 children and 17 grandchildren when him and Omima met.
Oh, shit.
The two had a whirlwind romance. Omima was said to make Bill younger. They acted like the two were love-struck teenagers. Within 4 weeks of meeting, they were serious and madly in love.
After 4 weeks, Bill asked Omaima to come with him on a road trip to visit his family and friends in Texas and Arkansas. He wanted to introduce his new arm candy to those he loved most. Somewhere along that way, they decided to make it official. They drove to Phoenix, found a justice of the peace, and got married.
Damn, they jumped into it.
Head first. His children, though, did not see the relationship the same as their own. Some of his kids were older than Omaima was.
Oh, wow.
And they were all suspicious of their new stepmother right off the bat. So after a few weeks of visiting Bill's friends and family, they headed home to California to settle into their new married life right there in Orange County. But just as quickly as they began their whirlwind romance, became a nightmare that ended in death. On Thanksgiving Day, Bill spoke to his stepdaughter and told her he had a turkey with all the fixings ready for dinner. Everything was great. There didn't appear to be any problems. 3 days later, however, Omaima would knock on Jose Cuervo's door, changing everything and how everyone seen her forever. So now we're back to where we began the case. But we're going to go back 3 days to November 28th to the tale that Omaima told Jose about her husband.
Shit just got real.
So it's Thanksgiving Day, 1991, in Costa Mesa, California. An Egyptian-born fashion model, Omaima Nelson, has just plunged a pair of scissors into the chest and stomach of her ex-pilot husband, Bill Nelson. And then she reaches for the clothing.
What the hell is she going to do with that?
As her husband flails around, Omaima beat him over the head with the iron until it broke in her hand.
Oh, my God.
When Bill was finally dead, she butchered his body right there on the kitchen floor.
Bitch is crazy. It's the ghost.
She said it's the ghost.
She done lost her shit.
She then went on. Are you ready?
Yeah.
To boil his hands in oil to remove his fingerprints. Put his head in the freezer to later break his teeth. And she even made a point in a type of symbolic revenge to castrate him.
She was possessed. Yeah, she lost her shit.
Omaima stuffed body parts into trash bags and placed others down her garbage disposal.
Oh, hell no.
I'm trying so hard not to laugh, but
your reaction is good. Down the garbage disposal?
Yep. At some point, she realized she had yet to eat anything.
No. Did she eat him?
Your whole body right there. Like,
did she eat part of him?
Oh. So Omaima claimed that she unleashed her fury over the sexual terror and abuse that she suffered at his hands. Acts that, according to Omaima, included pimping her out to old creeps for cash, rent, and in one case, a new car. However, her tale wasn't what shocked Jose the most. It was that she asked for his help to dispose of the body.
What was left? There can't be anything left.
Well, remember, she put some of it in trash bags.
What did she eat?
Stuck on that?
Yeah, did she eat him?
We walked away too. I'm going to ruin it for everybody. She told Jose that she needed some type of circle car to get rid of the trash bags that held her husband's body. She even offered to pay Jose for helping him. According to Jose, she said, quote, he's got $75,000 in his safe, 2 motorcycles in his garage, and I'll give those to you. Jose played along. He told her if she'd wait in his apartment, he would come back with a truck and help her. Omaima agreed. Jose left, and she waited for him to come back. But without Omaima knowing, instead of leaving to get his truck, he headed to the first payphone he could find. Jose called 911 and spoke to the police instead. So police arrived at Jose's apartment, where they found Omaima waiting for Jose to return. She was clearly distraught and upset, and according to officers, her appearance seemed to back up her claim of being sexually assaulted. But despite her appearance and the clear need of assistance, she told officers she didn't need him.
She didn't need the officer.
Yeah, I said, I need you out. I'm fine.
Well, now it's done for closing. What left was it? There was nothing left to do. He denied everything Jose had told them and swore her husband was very much alive, saying, quote, oh, he's in Florida on a business trip.
Oh, this bitch done lost her shit.
He told officers he hadn't lived with him long, so he really didn't have a way to contact him. What Amima didn't know was that her husband had been reported missing. Bill was reported missing after he had failed to show up for work on Monday following the holiday. His employer had told the police that the last time she saw Bill was right before he had left on the Wednesday before the long weekend. So, Amima seemed to be cooperative, but the answers she gave threw red flags up for police. They were not convinced by her story. So, officers looked closer at the red Corvette that she had driven to Jose's, and on the passenger seat, one officer had seen a bag. And upon looking inside the bag, he got sight of something that stopped and revolted. So, he picked something up right above the bag line, and he dropped everything. Inside the bag appeared to be organs, and they were human organs. They brought a coroner's investigator to the scene, and upon looking, the investigator pointed to a black spot on what appeared to be lungs and said that was from smoking. It was very clear that Amima was not telling the truth, and at that point, police knew they had a murder to solve.
They ain't gonna find us.
Amima was transported to the Costa Mesa Police Department for questioning. An officer headed over to the apartment that she shared with Bill. They knocked, and when no one answered, they broke a window and forced their way inside. Once inside the apartment, the officers were met with a cluttered mess. Aside from this, they didn't see anything right off the bat that told them something was wrong. At the police station, investigators headed in to question Amima. The interview lasted about 3 or 4 hours. During this, Amima wandered around the interrogation room, rambling. She talked in third person, talked about hallucinating, and most importantly, she continued to deny that Bill was dead. She denied telling Jose that she had killed her husband, and the human organs in her car that she was driving around? Well, she blamed that on Bill, claiming that he told her that he killed someone.
Oh, she's psycho.
So, with her denying that she told Jose anything and claiming the organs were from her husband, who had assaulted her, the investigators took things in a different direction. Amima was sent to the hospital for a sexual assault exam and to document her injuries. She had lacerations, contusions, and bruises all over her body. And at first glance, it appears that she was assaulted by somebody. So, while she was being questioned and taken to the hospital, officers at their apartment eventually came across signs that, despite their initial thoughts, proved something happened within the apartment, something horrific. As officers looked closer, they began to see small droplets of blood on doorknobs, on a wall, and on the carpet. Among the clutter, officers found trash bags like the one found inside the red Corvette, and upon looking inside them, they discovered more body parts, along with a broken lamp and an iron. And the worst was yet to come for the officers inside this apartment.
She ate him. Didn't she?
You were just stuck on that.
She was hungry. I want to know what she did.
What they found in the kitchen was even more disturbing than they could have ever imagined. They found pans inside a frying pan that had appeared to have been cooked with turkey meat.
She was going to eat him.
She was going to. And in the freezer, yet another gruesome discovery waited to be found. So inside the freezer, there were normal things. Hot dogs, peas, carrots. And in the back was Bill Nelson's head.
What the shit?
Or at least what they assumed to be Bill Nelson's head. Amima had fried Bill's head in a deep fat fryer, so identifying if it was Bill or not extremely hard to do just by looking at what they had found.
How the hell you deep fry a head?
They have, like, big enough pots you could deep fry turkeys.
Look at you. You're as morbid as he is.
No, my grandpa deep fries a turkey every year.
Well, yeah, I know.
Yeah, the big ass silver pot. So maybe she used that. I don't know. Maybe she used that. I don't know. I don't know how big his head was. Maybe it's in a regular pot. I don't know.
Okay.
In the bedroom, investigators found evidence that appeared to fit Omima's claims of what had happened to her. The bedposts were broken. She claimed to have been assaulted. But when the bed was stripped, they began to wonder if Omima had really been the one that had been. The mattress was covered in blood. According to investigators on the scene, it was soaked through and through. Even the box spring was soaked.
Damn.
This led them to believe that it was, in fact, Bill that had been tied up. And to confirm this suspicion, they looked to Bill's remains, and they found reddish, black rings of bruises around each of his ankles. These are there because if you're tied up long enough or hard enough, it'll leave bruising. And that's exactly what happened to Bill now. The evidence that investigators found, the more they searched, proved to be stomach-turning and brought them all to a disturbing conclusion. Randolph Pawlowski, the Orange County Deputy District Attorney, was at the apartment the day they found the graphic scene. He stated, quote, there were suitcases and plastic bags soaked with dark liquid from his body parts. In the fry cooker, there sat Mr. Nelson's hands. And when we opened the refrigerator, there was Mr. Nelson's head with stab wounds. She had his entrails in his Corvette, and she was trying to get an ex-boyfriend to yank out the dentures from the head so she could dump it in the back. Back at the hospital, the results of Omima's rape exam came up negative, proving that she had lied about what happened that Thanksgiving holiday. Her injuries were not consistent to her story. They were instead consistent with someone who had just dismembered a human body.
Oh, wow.
Armed with this evidence and what they believed to be Bill's remains, investigators brought Omima back to the station for more questions. They confronted her with everything that had found inside her and Bill's apartment. And to the surprise of everyone, Omima changed her story. She admitted that Bill was dead and confessed that he was the one that had killed him. According to her, though, she didn't remember how she did it, but she knew why. That doesn't really make sense.
No.
But whatever, I'm not her. She talked about drug and alcohol use, how she was abused, how mysterious people contacted her, and how she had visits. It seemed to investigators as though she was grasping at anything that would stick to lessen her culpability in the crime. Or was she truly mentally ill? Either way, they, of course, arrested her on the spot. In the end, she was sent to Orange County Women's Jail to await trial. Her bail was set extremely high, and she was not there. While Omima sat in jail, the medical examiner's office confirmed that the remains they had found were, in fact, Bill Nelson. And now the process of figuring out how Bill died began. His skull had a minimum of 25 wounds to it. Bill suffered a horrific and violent death. As we all know, she didn't just stop at killing him. She went on to methodically and skillfully cut up her now-dead husband's body. The medical examiner stated about this, quote, the way the body was cut up was actually done fairly professionally. Each cut of Bill's remains was done so well, the coroner's office began to raise concerns that he may have done this before.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's crazy.
More disturbing is the fact that once all remains were located and taken to the medical examiner's office, they were weighed and compared to the weight listed on Bill's license. This showed that about 180 pounds of Bill's body was missing.
He ate it.
Because I want to know. Like, I'm intrigued now.
When Omima was asked if she knew where he may have gone, she said, quote, no, he was all there.
Well, then where did he go?
Not like this, babe. With this information and the scene they had found inside the Nelson home, it was not hard for investigators to imagine where the rest of Bill's remains had went. Just before this case, Jeffrey Dahmer was everywhere. So this led everyone to wonder, had Omima ate her husband, or could she have done something else in an attempt to get rid of Bill's body? A neighbor gave a clue that could provide an explanation to where the rest of Bill was. He stated to investigators that all weekend he heard the Nelson garbage disposal running. It ran so long that late Saturday night or early Sunday morning, it broke. A few hours later, Omima had showed up with the 8th house. But was Bill her first victim? Investigators spent several days digging into the past of Omima Nelson, searching for this answer, and they found something that suggested their instincts may be right. It was revealed that Omima had a pattern of meeting older men in bars, going home, and ending up living with them. Then, when she grew tired of the relationship for whatever reason, she would leave, but not before stealing either a car or money from them. She was described as a low-rent gold digger.
That's bogus.
Basically, she was looking for a sugar daddy to take care of her. But Bill was the first sugar daddy to end up dead. These thefts weren't the only thing on Omima's record either. In 1989, Omima had been shoplifting in a local drugstore when she was spotted by two female security guards. When they went to search her, Omima became violent. She bit one guard on the breast so hard that it was almost bitten off.
Damn.
The other, she grabbed her crotch so violently that it brought her to her knees, and Omima was able to get away. She was eventually found and arrested for this theft. And she added battery to her list of charges. She was sentenced to a few months in jail, and by 1990, Omima had moved on, living with another man. And the circumstances under which she ended this relationship were similar to what she now claimed about her relationship with Bill. This man's name was Robert Hansen. Once news hit about Omima's legal trouble, he came forward and told police that during their brief relationship, things were similar to that of Omima and Bill. He believed Robert was going to take care of her, and he simply wanted sex. Their relationship came to a very abrupt end after a sexual encounter that bore some similarities to the way they believed Bill had been killed. According to Robert Hansen, Omima wanted some money. Basically, he asked her, okay, well, what are you going to do for me? And she replied, I want to tie you up. Hansen allowed Omima to do just that. Once he was tied up, according to Robert, she pointed a gun at him and threatened to kill him if he didn't give her money. Fortunately, his vines were not tight like Omima thought, so he was able to get her wrist free, get the gun away from her, and force her to leave his home. Embarrassed by what had happened, he did not call and report this to the police. But Orange County prosecutors were not as forgiving as he had been. They charged her with this crime as well.
Oh.
The assault on Hansen showed Omima's motive, one that had nothing to do with demons, visions, or the sexual abuse she spoke of. She used and manipulated men to get what she wanted, or she just stole it from them. But one question was still unanswered. Why has she murdered and dismembered Bill? Once her trial began, this saga grew more sordid, if that's even possible. The trial was basically a showcase of Omima's crime. Its sensationalism and adding to it were the lined walls that they covered in the courtroom of photos of Bill Nelson's deep-fried hands, frozen head, and skinned torso.
Ugh.
On December 2nd, 1992, the trial for 24-year-old Omima Nelson began in Orange County, California. It had been a year since she murdered and dismembered her husband in their shared apartment. Prosecutors believe they had a slam dunk case. They had the body, the evidence, and a confession. But there was only one thing they didn't have. A defendant that looked like the gold-digging murderess that they had revealed. At the time of her trial, Omima looked very different than when this whole thing began. She looked very sad. She looked like she had been through hell. But according to the prosecution, it was nothing compared to what Bill had been put through. In his opening statement, the prosecutor outlined how Omima had tortured her husband to death. The state's theory was that Bill and Omima began a consensual bondage session. He tied him to the headboard and most likely wanted some kind of money or the access to his will. And when Bill refused to give it to her, it sent Omima into a rage and she killed him. Robert Hansen helped back up this claim that the prosecution had presented to the jury. But Omima right off the bat claimed self-defense. He stated that not only did Bill trade her body out, but he was also into BDSM. This was done on a routine basis. He would bound her against her will, and then he would rape her. She went on further claiming that on the day she killed her husband, he had raped her, and she had feared for her life. The defense didn't deny that Omina had killed her husband. It was clear that she did. She even confessed. However, they argued that she had a reason to commit murder. And basically, it was the same reason that she had given Jose. Her defense attorney, Thomas G. Mooney, stated that Nelson had been in many abusive relationships as a result of her upbringing. And as a result of this, she had suffered from battered women syndrome for a long time. He further stated that this condition took a hard toll on her psychologically and ultimately led to the killing that she committed on Thanksgiving Day of 1991. She did undergo a psychological evaluation, which did show she had PTSD. But I have PTSD. I'm out here killing my husband.
Yeah, I have PTSD too, but damn.
I'm out here just murdering people. Anyway. The defense portrayed Bill as a sick and sadistic man who abused his wife sexually, physically, and psychologically. Classic blame the victim.
Mm-hmm.
The defense presented that she'd been abused and battered over the course of their marriage to Bill. A marriage that had just happened. A relationship that was a whole 4 weeks.
Right.
Whatever. They claimed that Omina believed that she was being raped, and because of that, she had no malice for her. According to the defense, the abuse Omina went through began in Egypt when she was only 7 years old. They painted a horrific and heartbreaking story of Omina's life growing up in Egypt. At this age, she underwent female circumcision.
Oh, I've heard about that.
For those that do not know what female genital mutilation is, often called FGN, it is a procedure that involves partial or total removal of the external female genitalia or causing other injury to the genital organs for non-medical reasons. More than 230 million girls and women alive today have underwent this procedure.
Oh, wow.
This is a custom in 30 countries in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. This is usually done to young girls anywhere from infancy up to the age of 15. And Omina underwent the most extreme type of FGN. And this involves cutting the clitoris completely off. She not only bore the psychological scars, but the physical scars for the rest of her life. And according to the defense, this trauma at 7 years old was only the beginning of a lifetime of abuse for Omina. Omina's account of her childhood was not a happy one. According to her, almost everyone in her family beat, tortured, or molested her. And the defense said Omina had developed coping skills, and those were to live in a fantasy world. To prove this, they called a psychologist who had evaluated her while she was on the stand. So they called her to the stand, that way the psychologist could evaluate her in front of the jury. The psychologist said that he had found her to be soft-spoken and childlike. She was often sad and tearful, but most of all, the psychologist found that Omina was a very deeply disturbed woman. Which, like, hello?
Yeah, look what she did.
Like, look what she's on trial for, guys. I don't think we need a psychologist to tell us all that. So at some point, Omina began to fantasize that she was a descendant of ancient Egyptians. And her delusions included belief that these ancient Egyptians either talked with her or acted through her.
She lost her shit.
The defense claimed that this included the night that Bill Nelson died, November 30th, 1991. They argued that Bill's intent was to rape Omina that night, and that it was basically a daily occurrence. They said he demanded oral sex daily, and that it came with name-calling and the degrading of Omina. They claim that the night of Bill's murder was the worst of all because she wasn't doing it how he wanted her to. So this time, Bill's anger and his insults grew, and eventually, Omina snapped. She became psychotic and claimed that ancient Egyptians helped her. They said that not only did they urge her to kill Bill, but they helped her mutilate his body. So, ancient Egyptians believed that if your body is scattered, you're not whole, you can't move on to the next.
Oh, okay.
So, that's why the defense used that as, oh, the ancient Egyptians did this because that's what they believed. And so, by her cutting him up, it was done in an effort to ensure that if he got into the afterlife, he wouldn't be there.
Right. That makes sense.
So with all this going on, the media had a field day with her. Her first interview with the psychiatrist came out. So when she was first arrested, before trial, all of that, they do all of those things. It had been leaked. In this, she had detailed putting on a red dress, red shoes, and a red hat before she prepared and cooked her husband's rib meat. It is reported that she stated, quote, "I did his ribs just like in a restaurant. It's so sweet. It's so delicious. I like mine tender."
She ate him.
We don't fucking know.
Well, that sounds like it.
The psychiatrist that evaluated Omama said she was in a psychotic state when she killed and ate her husband. He further stated that in his 20 years of practicing, he had never experienced a conversation with someone so bizarre, so psychotic. According to the prosecution, though, it was all a lie, a cunning ploy to build an insanity defense. And the only evidence of Omima's insanity was what came out of her mouth when she took the stand in her own defense. So Omima began her defense by telling the jury how her month-long relationship with Bill Nelson began as a hopeful love, but turned into what she seen as a nightmare. She claimed abuse, and that when he visited his family, he threatened to kill her. He said as they were driving through Arizona, he told her that if she didn't do what he wanted her to do, he would bury her in the desert. Omima claimed that night, November 30th, 1991, there was a very violent sexual encounter. One that only ended when she grabbed a lamp off the bedside table and broke it over Bill's head and began to hit him over the head several times with a clothing iron. And then, when the handle of the iron broke, she grabbed her next weapon of choice, a pair of scissors, and according to her, at this point is when her memory goes blank. She blacked out. My question is, if you were tied up, how'd you grab the lamp off the bedside table?
Right. True.
So, Mama said on the stand that she had no memory of dismembering Bill, and despite her confession, denied that she had ever eaten any part of him. She stated that the next memory she had was when she was alone in the apartment the next day with bags full of human remains.
Oh, well, that still would be scary.
Right?
Like
if that actually happened?
Yeah.
Ooh, I'd be freaking the fuck out. So, the prosecutor, however, could see right through Mama's claims of being a battered wife. In his cross-examination, he played a video for the jury that was shot on that very trip that Omima claimed Bill had threatened to kill her. The video doesn't show an anger-fueled man. Instead, it showed the two acting as if they were two kids in love. On January 4th, closing arguments took place, and the jury headed to the jury room to decide Omima's fate. The decision the jury had to make was a big one. It wasn't a question of had she done it, but rather, was it first-degree murder, manslaughter, or justifiable homicide? And on January 12th, 1993, 6 days later, the jury came back announcing that they had a verdict.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the verdict was?
Manslaughter.
You think it was manslaughter?
I think it was manslaughter. Bitch is obviously crazy.
The 24-year-old Egyptian immigrant was found guilty of murder.
What?
But they could not agree that it was first-degree murder. So instead, Omima Nelson was convicted of second-degree murder and assault with a deadly weapon for her attempted robbery of Robert. Her sentence was a total of 25 years to life, and she was to serve that sentence at the Central California Women's Facility in South Palchilla, California. Following the verdict, a psychologist who had evaluated Omima said that prison was no place for a sick woman and that Omima was treatable. I have to beg to differ.
Yeah, I don't think so.
The jury foreman stated after the verdict was read, quote, "It was a really tough, tough decision. We couldn't come back with a first-degree murder verdict because we couldn't find the evidence. It wasn't there. It took us 6 days. We worked really hard." O'Meara herself said, quote, "I'm sorry I dismembered him. I was in a fight for my life."
I'm sorry, that's not funny, but that's funny. I'm sorry I dismembered him. My bad. Sorry.
"If I didn't kill him, I would have been killed that day myself. I'm not a monster." She had also said a quote, "If I didn't defend my life, I would have been dead. I'm sorry it happened, but I'm glad I lived." She continued saying, "I'm sorry I dismembered him." So Omima was up for parole for the first time in 2006. In this hearing, she was found to be an unpredictable threat to public safety. In 2011, Omima went up for parole again. In her hearing, she insisted that she was not a monster and pointed out that she had never hurt the man that she had married since she had become incarcerated.
She got married again?
Yep. Even though she did have the opportunity to do so, because they were granted conjugal visits where they were allowed to stay in a trailer that was on prison grounds.
Oh, hell no.
Yep. The parole board was not impressed with her. And even though she was able to find a man to take care of her from even behind bars, her second parole hearing ended the same as the one in 2006. 5.5 hours later, and she was still denied. According to the Los Angeles Times, Omima had claimed in this hearing that she was a changed person who had, quote, "looked for love in all the wrong places," and further said, quote, "I have a strong desire to help others."
What, cut up people and eat them?
So, to her current marriage, in the 90s, Omima Nelson had married again to a man that she had met while she was in prison, obviously. This time, the man was in his 70s.
Damn, she's getting older and older.
He died before her second bid for parole in 2011, leaving Omima with a lot of money. So still, Omima vehemently denies eating her husband, saying, quote, "I swear to God, I did not eat any part of him. I am not a monster."
She ate him. She ate him.
We've decided it.
The way she's talking about being cooked his wrist, she ate him.
So, however, when the parole commissioner had asked what was the purpose in keeping him was then, he refused to answer.
Because she ate him.
So, she was denied for a second time, and she won't be eligible again until 2026, 2 years from now. She'll be 58 years old when she's up for parole again. But she's expected to serve the remainder of her sentence.
What are they going to do with her? Will she ever get the money that was left to her?
I'm not sure what they
do. I wonder how they do it.
I'm not sure if it just sits there and waits, or like if it gets put on her books, or if she decides. I'm not sure how that works. I'll have to look into that. So, we don't hear about cases of cannibalism often, especially here in the U.S. This case has captivated headlines, and we can all see why. This case followed shortly after Jeffrey Dahmer, so the fear of cannibalism being on the rise was very real to them. In the end, though, we are all left to wonder, was justice served here? Was Omima Nelson truly a monster, or was she an innocent victim? That's not.
This is crazy.
And that is the sugar baby cannibal, Omima Nelson.
Yeah. She lost her to it. That was a good one. I like that one.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
So I only have 3 sources for this one. All that from 3 sources. The biggest source I used was that episode of Snap from November
2.
If you can't find it, it's on their podcast. It's just under Omima Nelson. Oh, I have pictures. Okay, so gotta pull this up before he gets in. So that's Bill. That's Omima.
She was pretty.
Yeah. That's when she went to drown. She was totally different.
Oh, she does.
Doesn't even look like the same person. Yep, that's it. Oh, this is a like before everything happened. She was super pretty.
Yeah.
She was so pretty. So, that's it. All right.
Watch for monsters. And don't kill people. Bye, y'all. Bye, y'all.
Please be sure to rate and review so we can make sure we give y'all a podcast you love. Be sure to subscribe so you get notifications each week when episodes air.
If you want to send us a case or a topic suggestion, you can email us at monstroustcpod@gmail.com.
Also, be sure to check out our Facebook page for updates along with information and photos for each week's episodes.